Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Cedars Hall in Wells. Please welcome a man who once sang a solo in Wells Cathedral. It's Richard Herring. How lovely to be here. Thank you. Oh, wonderful. Thank you very much. Lovely to be here in Wells. So when I was at school in Cheddar, if you said someone's gone to Wells, it meant they were mentally ill. So, but it's good you've changed that graveyard into a tourist attraction. Well done, Wells. Well done. It's the top 10 tourist attraction in Wells. Welcome. It's lovely to be here. Welcome to Richard Herring's lovely Somerset Town podcast, because Wells is a town. Get over yourselves. It's got a big church. Though I was hanging around in Wells Town Hall in the 1980s as part of the Highway Code competition. Anyone else take part in that? We had a Kings of Wessex team doing very well. Then Tina Gavell put B to all the answers in the final section and we got knocked out. All the kids there call it Rahalastaba. So I don't know. That might catch on. It is lovely to be here. Let's give you some... I looked up some Wells facts. I've got a lot of memories of Wells, the Town Hall Highway Code competition, singing in... I think I sang in Wells Cathedral. I might be just making it up. I looked up the latest news for Wells on the internet, and the latest news is boiler replacement for primary school as part of countywide decarbonisation scheme. That's from December 2022. That's now nearly June. 6 months have passed. That's still up there in top news. Happened in Wookiee. It's not even from Wells. It's not news and it's not Wells. But there we go. I should say this is going to be part of my Edinburgh Fringe podcast series. As any guests I've got in the next few months that are at the Edinburgh, which I guess is this will go out during August. So I've decided rather than going to Edinburgh and spending £30,000, I'm just going to do it from home or places that are convenient to me and then pay myself £10,000 to live wherever I'm living.
I found a way through it and still sort of appear at the Edinburgh Fringe. We're staying in... we're having a week in Cheddar with my folks, but we're staying in a really horrible lodge on the outskirts. We stayed there a few months ago and it was beautiful and really big lodge. We thought, oh, we'll go and we'll upgrade. And we thought we'd upgraded, but we went into it. Literally three bedrooms wouldn't fit on this stage. I slept in a child's bed last night. Not with a child. It's not the next Philip Schofield scandal. That was topical when we recorded this. And to be honest, probably still is in August, let's face it. Who knows what's come out by now? I won't mess around too much, but yeah, so we're doing this fantastic, lovely to be at Edinburgh without being at Edinburgh, and being in Wales, which is, you should do a comedy festival here. Oh, you are, that's why we're here. On the drive here, I saw this sign, and I've seen this sign very rarely on the road, but it always confuses me. It says, picking up litter puts road workers at risk. Have you seen that sign? And every time I see it, I think, what, you asked me not to pick up my litter? And how does me picking up my litter put road workers at risk? And of course, I'm sort of thinking, so if something falls out of the car, I'm not meant to stop and pick it up. It means that if they have to pick up the litter, it puts their lives at risk. It's a very poorly written sign. No? And I'm so confused. I think the number of crashes that must cause by people trying to solve the riddle of what the fuck does that mean? So nearly. Luckily, we were going very slowly on the bank holiday way to Wales. I think that's probably enough to be getting on with. I was thinking, I once snogged a flute player in Wales Cathedral as well. I've already talked about the many times the Wells cinema where I saw Kentucky Fried Movie and the other Cinderella, and a probably dead now Somerset man shouted out "Pert nipples." It's gone. That's gone. Everything's gone. Even the Western Supermare Odeon's closing down now. It's all changing. I'm glad I'm going to die soon. Right, so don't have to see these changes. Right, we will crack on. We have got an absolutely fantastic guest for you this evening, in the morning, afternoon. He's probably best known for being a programme associate on 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown, and this is his 9th appearance, so it's getting quite hard to come up with those for him. Will you please welcome the incredible John Robbins, ladies and gentlemen? Hopefully, there he is. John Robbins.
Oh. Hello.
Hello, John Robbins.
Hello,
Nine times.
You must have used every single reference on IMDb.
Luckily, a couple of times. You interviewed me, so I didn't have to do one for that. But yeah, pretty much. Programme associate. Do you enjoy being your programme associate on both 8 out of 10 of Cats Does Countdown and 8 out of 10 Cats? Do you want to tell people what programme associate means?
It means writer.
Okay. They have writers on those shows?
Yes, to sort of come up with little zingers, sort of set the atmosphere, set the mood.
Yeah.
All those little bits and bobs in between the comedians riffing.
Yes.
Those are all written by people, which is no big secret.
It isn't a big secret, but they could call them writers. Why not call them writers? It's not your fault, John.
No.
You should have stood up and go, I refuse to be called a programmer. Presumably you've been on those shows. In your own right?
No.
No. You were that bad.
Me and Ellis did 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown.
Right.
And I think we both feel it wasn't our finest hour.
Okay.
mostly when you're a program associate, it's a lot of sort of eating snacks in offices.
Yes.
And reassuring very talented comedians that it's going to be fine.
Okay.
And then you go home. So you're sort of paid as almost like a sort of a mental health coach.
Yes.
To kind of go, I'm going to have another box of Choco Leibniz and tell you it's going to be fine. The stuff you've written is great. Can I get the last train?
Yeah. I'd really like to do, I've never done those shows. There's a lot of the panel shows I haven't done, but I would like to do the Countdown one just because I'd really like to play Countdown very serious. I wouldn't do anything in between.
Well, you should do Countdown.
No, I don't want to. I want to go on 8 Cats. Because there's no kudos to being taken Countdown seriously. You have to do that. But to literally just ask people to shut up and stop messing about and say, I'm trying to do as well as I can here and get the maths right, get the bit longest word. That's what I'm going to do if they ever have me on.
Yeah, I think, you should do that.
They're not going to have me on. I don't know why. Don't know what I've done. But anyway, well done on being there. And Buxton is on, Adam Buxton, 8 appearances.
Yeah.
Versus your 9 there. You've done a lot in Edinburgh. This is actually an Edinburgh one as well.
So well, this is quite a sort of searing indictment of the current climate in Edinburgh, that Edinburgh shows are no longer being recorded or produced or performed in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
It'll be an entirely remote festival.
I'd rather go to Wales. Yeah.
Yeah. So this, we spoke about this in the last one I was on, but my accommodation this year, I was quoted for a 3-bedroom flat for the month, £8,000.
Yeah.
That's not viable, but they go for
that. You
don't
really need a 3-bedroom flat though, John. I like to sleep in a different bed every other day and then just have a spare bed. I'm tired in the day. That's my day bed.
Yeah.
You like the three beds. Or three beds, in case Goldilocks turns up.
But you get into this ridiculous sort of situation where everyone you speak to involved in that process of accommodation is sort of passing the buck. So you say to the person who's letting it, the letting agent, you go, this is insane, I can't afford that. And they're like, well, the market is pretty competitive right now, but I'm afraid it's out of our hands. And you're like, what, you, the person who's advertising and setting the... How is it out of your... Surely it's only in your hands. And then they're like, well, but then if you're a landlord and they say you can get that,
you've got to take the money, haven't you?
You do have to take the money if it's there. But it's a shame because it just means it's out of reach for so, so many people.
Well, Edinburgh, I'm not coming this year because of that. So, yeah. Think about what you've done.
Think on.
Think... There'll be a lot of people crying in the streets when that hits them, when they realise.
But it won't be until everyone goes up that they realise how many people that has been the case with.
Yeah.
There'll be lots of holes. There's a Richard Herring-shaped hole in Edinburgh. There'll be a X, Y and Z-shaped hole, which hopefully means I might sell a few more tickets. So the ideal situation is no one goes up apart from me and I become the best and worst reviewed show at the Fringe.
Amazing.
Sort of bizarre sort of sellout run for a show that got hugely mixed reviews.
So what are you doing, two shows? Let's talk about this. In with this is Edinburgh. Let's talk about Edinburgh and then we'll talk about other stuff.
Yeah, I'm doing.
So what are your Edinburgh shows?
One is called Howl, which is also my tour show. That is the work in progress I did last year, sort of fiddled with and buffed up. And then I'm doing another work in progress, which then will become another part of the tour show, which begins after Edinburgh. So it's quite a sort of structurally and logistically complex process of creating something that works on tour, but breaking it in half so it works in Edinburgh.
Yes.
And then putting it back together to go on tour. So I'm trying to manage feelings of anxiety, dread and fear at the minute. but I just have to hope it'll be an awful lot of fun.
Yes, I'm sure it will be. What's Howl? It sounds like existential dread from the title.
You've nailed it. Well, it was the first bit last year, and the show that will be called Howl in Edinburgh is written by a very unwell man who was drinking an awful lot of alcohol and wondering why things went wrong all the time.
Yeah.
And then the second part of the show is written by still a rather unwell man, but who hasn't had a drink for 205 days at time of going to press. And so it is sort of a show of two halves, and an awful lot has gone on in between those two parts of the show.
Yeah.
So it's quite a challenge to write, but it's also very interesting to write. But you do start to question the basic essentials of what stand-up is, because you're writing it thinking, why on earth would anyone want to sit and listen to you talk about yourself for an hour and a half?
Shh,
and then you're like,
shh. You're about to blow the whole gaff.
Yeah. Because, spoiler alert, that is what stand-up is. Incredibly self-absorbed people talking about themselves for an hour and charging. Imagine your most annoying friend who's always going on about themselves. You suddenly turn up at their house for coffee and they're like, that's $22.50 plus a restoration levy for the house. But that's what it is. That's forever what it shall be.
So it's interesting. Well, I've given up drinking as well, but sort of accidentally. And mine's 2 years, and I mean, see, I don't even count it in days anymore. That's how much it's become part of my life.
Yeah,
I'm sort of near. I'm approaching 1,000 days later in the year. So
amazing.
I've done 2.5 years, basically, nearly two years to 5 months. But I didn't really intend to give up. I just stopped and then haven't really started again.
Yeah.
I was partly because it was more, I wasn't drinking loads. I'd given up a bit, and then in lockdown I started drinking like a couple of whiskies every night.
Yeah.
And I would just wake up in the middle of the night feeling a bit weird and confused and full of existential dread and have panic attacks. And then I stopped drinking and that more or less stopped happening.
Mm.
Unless I eat hot food late at night. So it's very much a digestive problem.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you wake up feeling like terrified and disconnected from the world. Mm. And like, it felt a bit like this was the only true moment where I really understood how terrifying the world was for these 2 hours in the middle of the night, and then everything else was a dream.
Mm.
Was that anything? What was your reason for stop? Because you love a drink.
Yeah, I'm an alcoholic.
Yes. That's that's another definition.
Yeah.
And I don't think I am an alcoholic, but I have drunk a lot of alcohol. So it's hard.
Yes.
It's hard, but I miss it a little bit, but I'm not missing it loads.
Yeah, well, that's been an interesting part of the process for me, is I've always had problems with alcohol. And it's always been special to me in a way which I began to realise it wasn't special to other people.
Yeah.
And began to realise that other people's relationship with alcohol was different to mine. And that I was, I think, born this way, because my first interactions with alcohol were slightly weird. Like, not in context of where I'm at now, when you sort of reverse engineer the experiences, you think there was always something about it that was special to you.
Yeah.
And it became really the sole focus of my life, was drinking. And what that does, I realise now, is it makes you very in self. And what I mean by that is it means you become very, very controlling of everything, because you are trying to direct your whole day, your interactions with people, your work, your relationships, everything, in order to facilitate you drinking in the way you want to drink. And the anxiety it causes, my anxiety was so bad that I began to be unable to do quite basic tasks. And when you're that anxious, and also very controlling because the booze is sort of directing you, what that means is that happiness for me became a day when everything went to plan. So the train was on time, I got to the place in the right time, people behaved in the way I wanted them to, there was the food I wanted to eat was available at the time, the work got done, nothing delayed me, I got to the right pub at the right time, they had the right alcohol, or I got home at the right time. Increasingly the drinking was at home on my own. Everything had to be like machine-tooled for me to feel that day had gone well. And that never happens.
Yeah.
So you're in this constant fight against a world you feel is against you, people who are against you, fate is against you somehow. And what I came to realize was that I could not be in control of anything. I wasn't in control of my drinking. I couldn't be in control of other people. And that was my moment of waking up in the middle of the night, was very much, I cannot go on like this. I can't do this anymore. I felt like I was losing my mind.
Yeah.
And I was. I couldn't hold information in my head. My relationships were just falling apart. I would be out with friends. And in my head, this is like, this is what you want to do. You want to go to the pub and drink. But I would get so anxious that I would leave and go home. I was very tearful a lot of the time. People would ask me how I was. I would just not be able to speak. And you're thinking, fuck, you're 40. You've got a pretty good life. You're a nice person. And you're feeling absolutely horrendous all the time. And I woke up at 2 a.m. and I was chatting to Ellis about it, and he said, was it a sort of light bulb moment? And when I realised when he said that, it was, but the light went off. The last light bulb in my whole life went off.
It was a big thing saying beer, and the last one went off.
Yeah, so so since that, because I would wake up at 2, 3, 4 in the morning, heart racing, panic, dread, you know, just sort of self-loathing. And the only way to turn that off is alcohol or beginning a lifetime's work of personal development.
But it's interesting that, you know, a lot of people go through all those things you're saying and don't stop. So it's kind of, I mean, it's still fairly early days, I have to say, John.
But yeah.
It's impressive to be able to, and especially if you are, you know, I don't consider myself an alcoholic, so giving up drinking, I tried to do it a lot through my youth, but I think like our society in the UK especially, and more for people my age, a little bit your age, was so geared around drinking that if you were single or if you just wanted to go out, there wasn't really another option other than going out and getting drunk with people. So you'd think, oh, I'll stop, but then you go, but then how will I ever have sex again? Yeah. How will I ever meet someone to go out with? You know, how I'll just be stuck at home, which obviously when you're 55 and have kids, you're stuck at home anyway. So, yeah.
Well, they say if you want to know why you drink, stop drinking.
Yeah.
And it will become clear to you what part alcohol plays in your life. I've just had a lot of unravelling to do of the impact it's had. And there's this weird process of like going back and thinking all of the things that I thought was me or other people or institutions or things that were wrong, and it was alcohol. But on the other hand, also having to grieve it. You know, it's how I've coped for 20 years.
Yeah.
Actually, it's how I've coped for 34 years since my first ever drink. And it's scary. It's at times terrifying, at times incredibly enlightening and moving and powerful to process feelings, which I haven't really done in a normal way, inverted commas, normal. I don't think many of us or ever will get to a point where we're totally processing feelings at face value and learning from them. But it's interesting how when I get cravings for alcohol now, I get through them using the tools I've learned and then suddenly feel overwhelming sadness. And it's like, oh, right. That's because you've taken alcohol out. That was the barrier between you and feelings. So now you're having feelings. This is what feelings are like. They're terrifying, but they can also be wonderful.
Yeah.
And, you know, fulfilling. And I went to the cathedral today. It was Wells Cathedral was one of my stepdad's favourite cathedrals. He loved photographing it, and he passed away this month. And I went there and just sat in the back of the cathedral and just had 2 minutes of peace. And that was amazing. And I can live off that today, that feeling of a tiny little bit of just sort of serenity. That's enough for me now today. I can now go about my business. Whereas when I was drinking, I mean, crikey Moses, I would have been lashed last night. I would have been hungover this morning. I would have been absolutely hating myself. And, you know, for today, because, you know, I can't say I've given up forever, because I can't get that. If I get that far in my head, it gets too stressful. But today I should hopefully be okay, because I've had a little bit of peace of mind.
It's good. I think
it's not hugely amusing.
It's not amusing, but the people of Wells are rapt. They're rapt. When the people of Edinburgh hear this, they're going to be furious with me. But luckily they'll forget, because they're what I'm saying is they're all drunk. that's why I'm not going back to Edinburgh, because I make comments like that. But, you know, plenty... Well, look, being a comedian is... You can live your whole life. You can live your whole short life. You know, you can be a functioning alcoholic as a comedian. There are several. There are several comedians who have drunk themselves to death. Sean Hughes is a prime example that's very much at the top of my mind, who very sadly kind of gave up for a while but went back. So it's fantastic that you've... And there's loads of people I could mention who are functioning alcoholics, but I'll wait for them to die and then I'll tell you.
It's really tough, man, because it's... I know I'm sick, and that's a challenge, but it's also... I'm so lucky to know what the problem is and know what the solution is. And if I choose not to take that solution, that's on me. But I kind of hopefully get to live two lives.
Yep.
You know, I think I've got everything that was good out of alcohol.
Yeah.
But it stops working. It just stops working. And then it starts to work against you. And the worst bit is when you get into a state I was in for about a year where you are as afraid of drinking as you are of not drinking. And that's hell.
Yeah.
And that's where I never want to go back to. But, you know, for as challenging as it may be, I'm lucky to have the challenge and to know what the problem is.
Yeah. And what's, you know, what I've always admired about you and Ellis and a lot of your generation of comedians is you do talk about these things. And I think this is incredibly helpful to talk about this. And it's very nice for you and open of you to talk about it, because I think it will help other people. I think there's a little switch that can go in your head, everyone's head, of, oh, I don't actually have to do that. You know, if you're drinking and you're enjoying it, like, please carry on. Mm. It's fantastic. But if you're not enjoying it, you don't have to do it, you know, and actually stop, you know, even stopping this time, and I've stopped loads of times, and I've stopped for a year at a time, but this time I kind of really went, yeah, look, it doesn't, you know, sometimes if you're at a party at the end of the night, it gets a bit boring when everyone else is really pissed, but it's actually, you can completely cope with it. And I think I always thought, I was always socially awkward and nervous and didn't want to go to parties, and drinking was the way to get to parties. But you can do it, and it's still fine, and, you know, there's other things to do. So it's great that you're talking openly about it.
Thanks, man. I'd say one thing that, like, not drinking is the worst, whereas being sober is great or challenging or, you know, is an opportunity for growth. When I was... Because I had about 7 years of trying to control my drinking in a way that I think you would understand. I had spreadsheets. I had calendars with days ticked off. I had average... I had nuts, mad behaviour. I thought that was me being in control of alcohol. And that was the excuse I used to say you don't have an alcohol problem, because you only averaged 39 units a week over the last 2 weeks or whatever. Yeah. Or you had 100 days off this year. And Adrian Charles wrote a book about alcohol, which is really interesting. I wrote a chapter for that about how I control my drinking.
Right, yeah.
And it came out, it's coming out in paperback. And I had to say to him, I need to edit this because it's all complete bullshit. Well, it's not bullshit if you have a normal relationship with alcohol and you want to be aware of how much you're drinking and cut back, that's different. But if you are an alcoholic, that sort of behavior will drive you insane. And it drove me mad. I was much worse company when I wasn't drinking, i.e. I have to not drink tonight. So I go into the day tense and short-tempered and the more controlling than even if I was drinking that day. So Adrian very kindly let me write a little sort of PS to say, this is all good advice, unless... so that I hope when the paperback comes out, there's a little sort of extra chapter.
I used to have a little counter like on my wall, like then how many days since we last had an accident, you know? So
yeah.
100 days since I last had a drink. Like, and everyone used to take the piss out. All my friends used to take the piss out. But go, days since I committed murder.
Well, my drinking was like a building site where every day it says 2 days since our last accident.
Yes, and then you're back. I should say as a counterpoint, though, 24 days after I gave up drinking, I discovered I had testicular cancer. So draw your own conclusions. That's how quickly That's how quickly he'll get you, so... Girls, keep on drinking. Fellas, think on. That is science. That is science. Well, thank you for talking about that, sir. And presumably, the...
You're about to ask me whether I can suck my own cock, aren't you?
I'm definitely getting there. I was amazed. I looked you up. I'm given how many times you've been on. I was amazed how few emergency questions I've asked you. So I'm very happy to have this dull, boring... bit. Because I know what's coming up. Look at me. Come and see my show about it. I don't really think that. It's funny. It's funny, isn't it? Sometimes it's funny to say bad things, isn't it, John? You notice that?
Well, it's funny because you get to think both things. Yeah. You get to completely believe both things you just said.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yes, let's ask. I'll ask you some emergency questions. I'll have to surprise you with something different. I don't think I've asked you. No, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I don't think I've asked you nearly any of the major emergency questions. But I haven't asked you if all the art galleries and museums in the world, have I asked you this? Got together. I can't believe this is such a good question, and I'm interested to hear your answer in this one. If they all got together, said, we love John Robbins, we're amazed he stopped drinking for like 2 days. It's incredible. We want to reward him, and he can take one thing out of any of the museums or art galleries in the world and keep it. Which thing would you like to own? It can be an artifact, it can be a painting, it can be...
Oh,
anything from a museum or art
gallery. What a great question. Yeah. There's two.
Okay, so I'm going to allow you two.
Francis Bacon picture of, it's a kind of screaming head. It's a judge. It's a picture of a judge.
Yes.
In a sort of clear, it almost looks like a glass box. And if the face is all distorted, I think it's absolutely incredible. So that's like, old John wants that.
Yeah. How?
And there's a Dali painting of the crucifixion with a rose on a sort of cuboid cross. Does anyone know what the name of that painting is?
We're in Wales.
Broken Britain. What the fuck? Come on.
I mean, Wales has all its airs and graces. They go, oh, look at our beautiful cathedral. Look at our little peasant's passage we can go through.
I think it might be called St. John of the Cross or something, but it's a Dali painting of the crucifixion with the rose. Oh, my God.
Okay.
Yeah, those two. I mean, then I don't have to do any shows if I've got those two paintings.
It'd be nice, wouldn't it? I mean, I kind of want all of humanity to die out and just leave me so I can go and have my pick of paintings.
Well, that's man. I went through mad...
Thank you, madam. You know, everyone else going, oh, I see Richard Herring's backing genocide. I'm surprised. Doesn't surprise me for his own selfish... Thank you, madam, for understanding that there was a joke in there. Thank you.
Well, before COVID, I had all of these fantasies of isolation.
Yeah.
You know, so end of the world fantasies. I'd play it in my head to help me get to sleep. And there's a... I did. I would. This is how I would get to sleep. I would imagine opening my door to my house and there being no one on the street and walking down to Tesco and being able to get whatever I wanted from Tesco, and I'd push the trolley all the way home, and then I would just... And then I would start to think about how long the alcohol would last before it went off. So I've got like a year before all the cans of beer and cider go off, and then I move on to the wine, and then the wine's got about 2 years because 90% of wine is meant to be drunk within 2 years.
Wow.
So, and then I have to sort of drink spirits for the rest of my life. So you could see why the fantasy wasn't actually about... It was just... I just wanted to have a drink. But I got into this genre of literature called the cozy catastrophe.
Right.
So an example of that would be The Omega Man, which was remade into I Am Legend film, or The Day of the Triffids, where it's basically people in... very stressful sort of disaster scenarios, but they have a base level of comfort.
Yeah.
So in Omega Man, the original with Charlton Heston, he's drinking like sort of Napoleonic brandy in his fort with all the vampires outside and the Mona Lisa is hanging on his wall. And it's that idea that everyone's gone. I mean, it's such a self-absorbed fantasy. It's literally everyone else on Earth dies apart from me and I get to do whatever I want.
Yeah.
But it is it's a thread that runs through a lot of very popular sort of Netflix shows. Like The Last of Us is essentially that thing. You know, the hideout that the couple have in Last of Us is that fantasy. The bunker in The Road that's full of all the tinned food, that is that feeling of warmth and comfort you get.
But
it does require everyone else on Earth to die.
Whenever I watch those shows, like when I'm watching The Walking Dead, I just want a series where they just are all okay and they've got it all sorted out and they just build the city again and there's no problem from bad men or zombies. But that is what happens in The Last of Us, that those guys, Ron Swanson and the guy from The White Lotus get together... and then they live a very happy life.
I think that's the two best episodes of Last of Us are their episode and the episode with the girl and her childhood sort of friend.
Oh, yes.
Where they've got that sort of, you know, youthful crush kind of tension between us. I think it's absolutely amazing. But then the main character I thought was just, I don't believe anyone's that grizzled. I don't believe you can be that grizzled full time. So I didn't quite believe him.
Fair enough. Right, I'll ask you more emergency questions. I don't think I've asked you. I'm going to wait. I've got to time them more carefully. This is a bit similar. And again, might get this. I'll ask you a stupid one in a second. If, like a caterpillar, have I done this one? If you go into a chrysalis and you see, this is a bit too. We've already done this, but you go into a chrysalis and emerge as anything you want. So a caterpillar dissolves and turns into a butterfly. You go into a chrysalis, John Robbins, you dissolve and you come out as anything you want. What would you like to come out of the chrysalis as? A pint of beer.
No. well, okay. You've just added an extra layer to my fantasy. I would like to emerge as a top 50 PGA professional golfer who can have a normal relationship with alcohol. I think if you are an elite level sports person... but not so elite that it kind of ruins your life. Because if you were 50th best golfer in the world, you're probably earning 4 or 5, maybe 10 million a year.
Right.
But you can walk down the street, golf fans will know who you are,
yeah.
But you're not like Tiger Woods or Rory McIlroy. To live that life and then to sort of have your retirement or post-career world sorted out, maybe you could go into commentary or maybe you could, but you don't need to because you've made enough money, but it's not ruined your life. It's just so nice. But I would have to be able to have a sort of healthy relationship with alcohol for that to work.
Fine. I mean, I think playing golf is worse than being an alcoholic. And more damaging. That's just my opinion.
That's your opinion. Yeah. It's my... I'm not going to say it's my happy place, but it is. It's it was my own, my first accidental mindfulness of the only thing that actually worked, even at my absolute worst. I could switch off my brain for 4 hours and just think about the shot I was about to play. And there is a lot of correlation between, like, the mental side of golf and the mental side of life. But it does require you sort of enjoying golf to really have any interest in that Venn diagram. But sort of acceptance, accepting, on the one hand, the fact your ball has ended up in the bunker.
Yeah, thanks.
Or accepting...
Thanks for pointing that out. Very sensitive.
And then, well, that's the heart that you've absolutely got to the heart of it.
Yeah.
And then accepting that someone, you had to get your testicle taken away.
Yes.
Accepting those two things. Because your attitude is what changes the impact that those two situations have on you, how happy you are. You know, I mean, at the center of absolutely everything I've read and I'm reading and doing is the only thing we can control is our reactions, right? I can't control how people behave to me. I can't control whether, you know, I get offered this work, or I can't control whether this relationship works out. I can control how I respond to those things. And that's the lifetime's work. Because the same thing could ruin my life and be a huge sort of moment of change and acceptance for you.
Yeah.
But it's us that control that.
Yeah, it's true.
It's, again, not very amusing.
We've got to laugh on the way there, and that's all that matters. I've got some, you know, emergency questions. People send them in. Adults write them to me, and they're all shit, so stop doing it. Only I can do it. Children can do it. And, occasionally, AI can do it. But there's some missing ones. But this is a very good question that AI came up with. What is the most ludicrous thing you've ever done in the name of love? I mean, there must be a lot for you.
Fuck.
So far, everyone who's answered this question has done an absolute banker of an answer. No pressure. I think it's a brilliant question. Thank you, artificial intelligence. One day I can be replaced. Are you looking forward to being replaced?
I'm up to 1994 in my head.
Okay.
Oh, God. I'm just dealing with an awful lot of poems I wrote. I'm now dealing, 1998, what were we, 98, bought a girl 7 Valentine's Day presents, weren't even going out. Including a biography of Che Guevara. A CD single of Paul Weller's You Do Something to Me. The Faber Book of Love Poetry. Oh, fuck me. Anyone got any booze? Flowers delivered to the school. Oh, my God.
Were you a child as well at the same time?
What?
Were you at school at the time that happened? Because it's not... We can cut it out, John. I don't want to wreck your career. We all make mistakes. It was unwise, but not illegal.
What was the terms of the question? Most ludicrous.
Yeah, most. Well, this is what AI says: the most ludicrous thing you've done in the name of love.
One relationship when it began, I printed out all the texts we'd ever sent each other into a sort of book.
Wow. And got it published and put in bookshops.
You should do it for merch, actually. Just driving quite worrying distances for very small gestures.
Yeah.
Like just rocking up. I'm here!
I think that's always...
What?
I think that's always the unannounced visit.
Yeah.
I mean, see, these are the kind of things... A lot of things happen in films, a lot of things happen in old films that are like borderline... Well, not even borderline, absolutely be over a line. Mm. But that happens in films a lot, where someone turns up unannounced, and it's sort of often, sometimes it's a terrible thing, but often it's a good, oh, how romantic. A lot of things that are considered romantic in reality, that is a terrible thing to do to someone.
Yeah, a lot of things that we're told, or certainly I was told growing up, were romantic, are actually quite controlling.
Yeah.
And quite based in need.
Yes.
Whereas actually, I think I would be much, I mean, and am over the last, you know, 10, 15 years or whatever. I think it's the teenage stuff, because when you're a teenager, everything just feels so intense, so vivid, and you think you're so right. I was thinking the other day about like how pretentious I was as a teenager, but then that's what being teenage is. It's believing 100% in the thing you've only just learnt about. And going, that's me! The thing my teacher just told me, oh, I'm really into this thing now. And going back to your mum and saying, oh, I'm into this thing now. And she's like, oh, right, are we? And then the next day you find another thing. But that's what life is when you're that age. It's just sort of trying to assimilate the entire world, music and art and poetry and sport and girls and boys and just feeling so, like, obsessed with it immediately. And then you do eventually chill out. If there's any teenagers listening to this, you will eventually just chill out. But just being so grateful that none of that took place on social media for me. I mean, fuck me. Christ, if I got flowers to deliver to the school, imagine what my TikTok account would have been like. I feel so... I drive past kids as part of my...
As long as you're driving past, that's okay. So if you're stopping, offering them sweets, that's where you go.
I drive past kids by accident on my regular route, and I see them like... I know this is such a sort of everyday thing to say. I see them on their phones and I just think, you poor, poor people. I cannot imagine what your life is like. To add to that, you know, my friendship group when I was at school was, you know, six. The year I was in was maybe 200. The school itself was a big one, but it was 1,000.
Yeah.
Imagine that's, you know, 8 million.
Yes.
I couldn't bear it. No. And I still struggle with social media now because I just feel quite shy. Like, I don't want to, but I do want to. But, God, I haven't mentioned I'm doing Edinburgh on social media. Can you believe that? It's insane.
It is insane.
I will have done by the time this podcast goes out.
I hope so.
Yeah. Otherwise, I'm in real trouble. Yeah.
Yes. Not all the AI questions are good. If I were to give a cat a human voice, what would it sound like if it sang the national anthem?
I think it would sound like Her Majesty the Queen.
Yeah.
I can imagine a cat sounding like that.
I mean, but also you're giving the cat a human voice. It's not saying what would a cat sound like if it could speak and sang the national anthem. Mm. It's saying what if a cat had a human voice? It would sound like whatever human voice you'd chosen to give it. So the Queen is an excellent answer. And, you know, and I think a fitting tribute to her life. That she... in cat form, is singing, God save me.
God save
God
me.
God save myself.
Yeah.
Oh, it's too late. You fucker. What all that singing? Why did it? What about the song, God? What about the song?
Are you really worried about AI?
Not too worried.
Every time I hear a fact about it, I get immediately incredibly worried and then stop thinking about it until the next time I hear a fact about it.
Are you worried about it destroying the world or destroying the job of a writer-comedian?
Oh, the world.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, is that more important? I don't think AI can do comedy and, like, it can try.
Oh, it will do. It will learn.
I don't think it will.
Someone set... the producer of our radio show, Dave, writes... very basic / awful / good poetry, depending on your relationship with poetry and Dave. Someone said to an AI bot, write a poem in the style of Dave Masterman about this thing, and it was bang on. So I think by this time next year, I'll be able to say, write an Edinburgh show in the style of John Robbins, about alcohol and self-loathing, but in a way that's not too self-absorbed and needy, has enough jokes and will sell out a moderately sized arts centre, and it'll be able to do it.
Yeah. I don't think it will.
Okay. I'll see you next year.
I think there's a human element to most art that I think AI won't quite get to, but we'll see. We'll see. I don't think it'll destroy the world.
Hmm.
Oh, if it does, just turn it off.
I think it's more...
That's the mistake AI's made.
It's...
To live inside a computer. Oh, there we go. Oh, yeah, it's fine.
But we haven't done that with social media.
No.
We are all... I was chatting about this to my pal the other day. All of us, deep down, the secret we're keeping from ourselves is that we want to switch off our social media but can't. We know it's the problem. We know that it's damaging our lives, our friendships, politics. We know it has ruined our politics. You know, everyone who subscribes to The Rest Is Politics thinks, the reason I love this show is because this is what politics should be about. It's about people disagreeing agreeably. It's about, you know, pragmatism and being sort of centre-left or centre-right. And we know this is the solution and we love it. And this is what we want politics to be. Well, okay, so turn off your social media and you'll have that. And we are embarrassed that we can't. And I'm embarrassed that I can't. And it's the same with AI. We won't turn it off because we won't know what's real and what's not real. That's what's scary. Oh, God, now I'm getting scared again, so I need to go through a period of not thinking about it again, please.
Right. In that case, I'll ask you, have you ever tried to suck your own cock? That should cheer you up. I can't believe I've never... I mean, how have I interviewed you this many times and never asked you that?
Especially some of the positions you found me in when you walk into the dressing room.
Exactly.
At a very young age, I have a back problems. My lumbar spine, which as any self-congratulators will know, the lumbar spine has got to be the most flexible area.
Yes.
I've got a lumbosacral L4 vertebrae, which means my lowest vertebrae on one side is fused to my pelvis.
Okay.
A few people have it. It can give you back problems. It gives you sciatica sometimes because it puts... too much pressure on the vertebrae above it. So it means, so I've been going to the gym for the last 2 years, right?
Just so you can suck.
I'll try and touch my toes now.
Yeah.
Right. This is after 2 years of going to the gym.
Yeah.
As far as I can get, is there.
Yeah, you're nowhere near, mate.
Yoga for an hour a day for the rest of my life, I still wouldn't be able to touch my toes because my back just doesn't hinge. Okay. So I've been saved the the practical disappointment of attempting it. But good. I'm sure I did have a bloody good go at one point.
Yeah, for sure. It's good, I thought that question, we'd heard every possible answer, but there you go. It's opened another exciting avenue into the life of John Robbins and a potential show down the line. When you've really run out of ideas. My fused vertebrae. I've never asked you about the human centipede. Have I asked you that?
I think you might have done.
Oh.
Is it who's in front and who's behind? Yeah, I think you did.
Okay, all right, then. That's fine. Thank you. I was just worried. Worried I hadn't asked. As long as it's on record somewhere, then that's all that matters. I understand. I've been listening to some podcasts, and I listened to your last. I love your show with Ellis on Five Live. I've started listening to Five Live all the time.
Really?
Yeah.
It's the voice of the UK.
I love Colin Murray. I've got more into sport, I have to say. So I kind of enjoy just. I listened to women's football yesterday on the way, and I kind of. It was great.
Yeah.
But there's some very good presenters, and you guys are good. I learnt that you've been having your skin lasered.
Yeah. I've always had quite bad skin on my face, and I always thought it was booze.
Right.
Because I would, you know, 2 weeks drinking, face would go all red, and then I would stop drinking, it would disappear. So I was like, well, this is just the life of someone who drinks too much. And then I stopped, and it got a bit better, and then it got really bad.
Right.
Sort of flared up, like red, really burny bits. So I got into a mad world. And anyone who's had, like, skin problems, I think it's fucking horrible. It's horrible. Because you feel so self-conscious and so confused because you don't know what the problem is. Because as my GP said, you can be allergic to anything. Well, thanks. So I've gone from thinking, well, maybe it's wheat. Maybe it's, you know, lactose to, or maybe it's something that exists in the world. And then you end up, you know, you hear people say, oh, I had bad skin, I use this. So you buy that thing and you put it on and it gets worse or it gets better. And then you're chasing your tail. And I realised I was putting like 8 different creams on my face. And this is all for something that you probably wouldn't have noticed. You know, you probably wouldn't have ever thought of me as someone who had bad skin. But it was, I was very in my head. So anyway, I went to my GP. I went to a dermatologist. I went to a skin expert. And they all gave me slightly different advice. But I kind of simplified what I was doing. And then I went to a laser lady who was very enthusiastic, started lasering my face while I was still holding the brochure about the machine she was using. I was thinking, fuck it, it can't make it any worse. So I'm going for my first appointment next week. But that's just to get rid of, like, I've got boozer's veins on my face.
I thought you'd already bit, so, you know, I can't see anything. I thought, you've done it and it's all gone.
It looks good today. Yeah. But I think dermatology is a real, they make a huge, must have a huge impact on people's mental health. Because if you, especially when it's on your face, it's really difficult. I mean, I am talking about, I've got the mildest fucking problem. It's probably a bit of rosacea. It's not anywhere near as bad as it can be, but I do really feel for people because it's not knowing what's causing it and how you can control it. One, they said that it could be made worse by heat, cold, or wind. Like, can you imagine thinking, oh, it's fine now, because as long as I avoid heat, cold, or wind, it'll be fine. I mean, it's nuts. So, anyway.
Have you seen this guy, this 45-year-old guy who's trying to become 18 years old using science, and he does things like inject himself with his son's blood.
Oh, I just feel so sad for him
there's
already.
There's something about salmon semen or something. He's been drinking salmon. I think that's part of it. It's just a bit of fun.
Oh, he was already doing that.
That way you could move it from booze to salmon semen. Yeah. What are you drinking, John? Just some salmon semen.
But I think it's such a privilege to grow old. You know, you think of people who haven't lived as long as me.
Yeah.
You know, and especially with when you factor in stuff like booze. I mean, even the stuff I remember, like, I once jumped across 2 second-story balconies at uni, and the balcony sort of moved beneath me, and I managed to grab on to something. I could easily have died. I could have been, the 19-year-old kid you read about in the news who fell off a balcony. Yeah. I feel really lucky to be 41, and, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to live, but I've never really had a problem with aging apart from when it's sort of like, you know, you should have done this by now or you should have done that by now. But I don't really mind about, you know, grey hairs and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, when I get to 90, if, you know, big if, but say I got to 90, I would think what an enormous privilege it is to have survived and to have seen so much. Yeah. I mean, 90, that's another 25 Ryder Cups I get to watch. That excites me. 25 Ryder Cups, think of all the drama.
It's incredible. It starts going faster, John, I have to say. From about your age to my age, feels in my brain like, well, I still feel like I'm 35, so it's
good. Yeah, I'd say 35 is where I feel like my sort of, I always thought I would feel 17 forever, and that wasn't the case, and thank Christ it wasn't. But I think I'll probably always feel 35, but I will always feel like I've been very, very lucky. Gratitude is the opposite of resentment, you see. That's what I'm learning. And the opposite of anxiety is acceptance and all this kind of stuff. So just feeling grateful for life is good.
I'd say if you ever do try and look the same as your own 18-year-old son, as a 45-year-old, it's going to be tricky for you.
Yeah.
Don't have loads of photos taken standing next to him. That's what I would say. So there's this 45-year-old guy. He looks a bit, his chest looks like he's got like little moobs put in, you know, like strongman moobs, though. He looks very white and pale. And then he stands next to his perfectly normal looking, handsome 18-year-old son. You go, yeah, mate, you're really nowhere near. You're nowhere near. You're about as near as I am if I stood next. Mm.
But it's odd because you think of, like, if we were to think in our heads of the people, the older people we most admire or sort of most aspire to be, they tend to be people who sort of are their age, who embrace that age. It doesn't necessarily mean you can't sort of be youthful, but they sort of have a sort of vitality about them.
Yeah, I think he's trying to live forever, you know. I think that's the idea.
Why?
I know, it'd be tedious. Just for longer. But, you know, but if you're going to get to 90, it'd be nice to get to 90 and still feel more or less... So, you know, I'm with my folks this weekend, and my mum's 86 this year,
yeah.
And she's still playing badminton with the kids and running around. My dad is 87, is not playing badminton and running around. I'm sure he would say it would be nice to be running around at 80.
We all want to be in mobile and in good health at that age, but we know the solution to that is diet and exercise.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Well, there's no, you don't need to fucking inject your son's blood into you. You need to walk every day. You need to have three periods of pretty sort of pretty energetic work every week. You've got to eat, you know, what is it? Because I'm doing a lot of CrossFit, so I'm, you know, completely indoctrinated into this, but it's meat, veg, nuts and seeds, a little starch, no sugar, a little fruit, exercise three times a week, and that will get rid of 70% of the things that kill us. And mean that when you're in older age, you'll have the mobility, you'll be used to the sort of lifting and moving, so you're not going to have a fall, because most people who die in hospital, it starts with a fall. Whether it's the fall that kills them or not, it might be an infection they get, it might be losing mobility because of the fall, so don't fall over. Just walk around with a big rubber ring around you.
There must be something, there might be a dragon's den.
Just bounce back up.
That might be a good dragon's den, like a sort of...
Like the noddy,
like the car thing, but it just comes out if you fall over. They must be able to do that.
Airbags, there are. You can get them for motorbike riders.
Yeah.
You get airbags in the suit.
Yeah, so walking around, just a big...
Yeah.
Whichever way, it would have to surround you. It must be doable, yeah.
Well, like the Michelin man, like in a Zorb. All we need is to live in Zorbs.
Yeah, we just live in... and also your allergies. If you lived in a Zorb, you could just gradually start putting things in, and then when one of them makes you go blotchy, we've found what you're allergic to.
Well, a Zorb is the only way you can control hot, cold and wind.
It is.
So I could have an air-conditioned Zorb... And, you know, if someone paints do not give booze, I no longer have to do any of the personal development stuff because no one's going to give me booze. So we can write all of our list of stuff on the outside of the Zorb.
Yeah.
Sex would be a problem, but I'm sure your brain will somehow come up with
sex
a way around it.
Sex could be amazing with two Zorbs.
How would
you... Yeah. We're both in a Zorb.
Yeah, nude.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it would also be quite a pornographic experience.
I mean, it'd be a lot just wanking at each other and waving. Again, careful if you're near schools, John. Don't go to a school.
Our vision of a perfect future has been now given the Richard Herring treatment, and it's people wanking in Zorbs.
Very happy and beautiful skin. Tell us where you're on at the Edinburgh Fringe for people who are the very rich people who are travelling up to the Edinburgh Fringe this year in their gold carriages.
So my work in progress is, I won't even worry about the dates because they're all different days, but the work in progress is 3:10 at a room called the Subatomic in Just the Tonic's Nucleus venue. And the main show is at 8:50, which is in the main room at the Nucleus venue. And the Nucleus venue is about 200 yards up from the Pleasance Courtyard.
Okay.
And it's not the main Just the Tonic venue on Cowgate. So please don't come to the wrong one, even though they are quite close.
And for the rest of the time, just be wanking in a Zorb.
Yes.
For anyone who wants to look at that.
On the meadows.
On the meadows. That's lovely. Lovely to talk to you. I'll just say to the people here in Wells, I will be out in the foyer after the show, and I've got loads of all my books. I've got my ball book and lots of other books that you can buy if you want. If you want to say hello, get a selfie, you're very welcome to
and
say hello.
Sorry, can I just plug my tour?
Yes, please
because
do.
Because I've yet to do that in public.
Yes, do it. Redo it.
Which starts on the 13th of September in Norwich, and then it's about 50-ish dates until December.
Great.
And there's lots of tickets still available, and I'm really, really looking forward to doing it.
Good.
And the tour is called Howl, and you can get tickets at johnrobbins.com.
Good. And please do that. John is an absolutely fantastic, award-winning, comedy award-winning, though Hannah Gadsby's the one everyone remembers, comedian.
I've let go, Richard. I've let go. I'm so pleased for everyone. I have an attitude of gratitude.
Why did I get him depressed right at the end? It was just going so well. Why could I not resist that? I'm doing a gig in Wells at 5 o'clock, but I think it might be sold out, but it's at the Little Theatre. But do come along, and I'm trying out material about my testicle, if you haven't heard enough about that already. But for the moment, please give it up, ladies and gentlemen, the amazing John Robbins! Thank you so much to Wells for having us. We'll see you soon. Thank you. Bye.
You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, John Robbins. The music, as ever, is provided by Scant Regard. I am indebted to everyone at the Wells Comedy Festival, everyone at Cedars Hall, to my director and friend, Chris Evans, not that one, to Ben Evans, not that one, to Kathleen McKeegan, not that one, my wife and children, let's say, as well. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.